What I'm going to do now is firstly show a little video clip, partly because hopefully it'll just warm your heart. It's one of these, it's only very short. When I saw it, it made me kind of goosebumps when I jump up and go, yes. So hopefully do the same for you. But it is related to what we're doing today. This is a clip from an Australian program, a bit like our Question Time. So there's a panel, and it's National Australian TV. It's coming right at the end, but it's only about 2 minutes. And the question they're about to be asked is, what is the most dangerous idea you could think of that would be for the good of the world? Not dangerous as in bad, but dangerous, so kind of radical and dangerous that, but would be really good for the world. What can you think? That's the question. Okay.
So I'm going to go to a final question which you'll all be able to respond to, and in your own way. The question comes from Lisa Malouf.
Which so-called dangerous idea do you each think would have the greatest potential to change the world for the better if it were implemented?
Dan, let's start with you.
Oh my God.
You got to give us a minute to think about that.
Population control. There's too many goddamn people on the planet. And I don't know if that's a... You know, I'm pro-choice. I believe that women should have the right to control their bodies. Sometimes in my darker moments, I'm anti-choice. I think abortion should be mandatory for about 30 years. That's a dangerous idea. She wanted a dangerous idea. So throw a chair at me.
That is a very dangerous idea.
I actually have to think about it for a minute.
Okay, let's go to Jermaine.
Well, I'm always in the same place. The most dangerous idea, the one that terrifies us the most, is freedom. To actually be free is, to most human beings, disorienting, terrifying. But it's the essential bottom line. If you want to be a moral individual, you must be free to make choices, and that includes making mistakes.
Peter.
The most dangerous idea in human history and philosophy remains the belief that Jesus Christ was the Son of God and rose from the dead. And that is the most dangerous idea you will ever encounter.
I agree with that. Just quickly, I think you can't really leave it there. Why dangerous?
I can't really leave it there because it alters the whole of human behavior and all our responsibilities. It turns the universe from a meaningless chaos into a designed place in which there is justice and there is hope. And therefore we all have a duty to discover the nature of that justice and work towards that hope. It alters us all. If we reject it, it alters us all as well. It is incredibly dangerous. It's why so many people turn against it.
Hannah Rosen.
Wow, that's great.
I'm tempted to say something about the Jesus.
That's great. Yeah? I think it's brilliant. It does. It's the thing that changed all of history. Now, do you remember in the 1992 American presidential election, Clinton had a famous slogan?
It's the economy.
This not working? It's not in? Oh, should we? Not working. Okay, is it not working? It's the economy, stupid. Okay, well now, that's really annoying. What do you put in there, as Christians? It's the gospel, stupid. It's the gospel. And what I want to do this morning, really, is just think a little bit about some of the practical implications of the gospel for, hiya matey, what we do and how we, particularly as a church. Now, if you just go to the next one. Okay, keep clicking. 1 Corinthians 9, 15 to 27. I'm going to turn that up. Are there any batteries around for that thing?
The blaze.
Not got any. No, okay. Page 1152. And these may be sort of familiar, or certainly parts of them will echo with us, but they're actually, if you just kind of begin to, and more than we'll have time for this morning, begin to kind of sink your teeth into it and get they're amazing. From verse 15 onwards, I'll pick it up. Paul says, I have made no use of any of these rights. He talks about his rights as an apostle. I make no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing things to secure any provision. I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. Necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. We'll go on to what he's talking about in a minute, but one thing you can pick up he's saying is he's really sort of putting his rights to one side. Massive implications. Though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. And then just across the page at chapter 10, verse 31. So, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offence to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I try to please everyone in everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that they may be saved. Be imitators of me as I am of Christ. And really what I want to kind of begin to tease out and go thinking about this morning really is the gospel, which is supremely summarized in the life, death, resurrection of Jesus Christ. The gospel is what God has done, not what we do. It's the willingness of Jesus, Philippians 2, not to consider equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, became human, humbled himself even to death on the cross, didn't stand on his rights, gave everything away for the sake of the salvation of others. And Paul says, that's what I'm imitating. As an apostle, I'm not insisting on my rights. I put them to one side. Why? For the sake of the gospel and for the glory of God, that I might save people. And he says, that's what I want you to imitate. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. That kind of way of thinking, that way of processing. So do you want to just press the next one, Sam? He doesn't make full use of his rights. Next one. What does it mean for Paul to be a servant of all? I'll move quickly on this because we want some discussion. But verse 19, though I am free from all, I've made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. It's a servant of all for the sake of the gospel. It doesn't mean I'm kind of busy running around just being a doormat to all and sundry. My willingness is to do whatever it takes to go the extra mile, to put my preferences to one side for the sake of the gospel, for their salvation. That's why he's a servant of all. Okay, again. Okay, servant of all for the gospel. What does it mean to become all things to all people? That's a non-rhetorical. What do you think? What does it mean to become all things? Or maybe even better to say, what doesn't it mean? What does it mean?
It doesn't mean that we should be in a nice inclusive club here in Melbourne.
Yeah, thank you. It's often used today in a derogatory way, isn't it? Somebody, when you talk about somebody becoming all things, he's a sort of person, he's all things to all men. You kind of think of somebody who says one thing in one place, says another thing in another place. You know, he's got no backbone, no moral fibre, he just says whatever. All that isn't what Paul means. Okay, what does it not mean? To become all things for all people is to do with the gospel. We'll come back to that in a minute. His motivation in all this, again, verse 23. The sake of the gospel, salvation of people, and the glory of God. 10, verse 31, all for the glory of God. Verse 33, do it not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that they may be saved. is what's driving him not to insist on his rights. All things to all people for the sake of the gospel. But here's what's we want to pick up on in that little paragraph, verse 19 through to 23. What is astonishing about verse 20, do you think? Given that it's written by Paul. Yes, Rosemary? He was a Jew. Now, why is that amazing? Well, he does do. He certainly does. That's his practice. You see him when he goes to the synagogues. He quotes from the Old Testament. Well, we might say. If we were to be missionaries in France, well, now to reach the French, I've got to become like the French. I need to learn the language, I need to try and get hold of their culture, I need to engage with them so that I can... But I would do it as an Englishman, becoming like a Frenchman. What Paul is saying is, no, I'm a Christian. I'm not an Englishman. I'm not a Jew. I'm a Christian. That is my nationality. That is my identity. I am a Christ follower, a Jesus one, and therefore I am defined. I'm no longer you, whoever might say, "Oh, I'm Jewish. I grew up in the Jewish synagogue. My parents are Jewish." Blah, blah, blah. But who I am is a Christian. As a gospel man, as a Jesus follower, I become like a Jew to reach Jews, like a Gentile to reach Gentiles. He's not saying, well, obviously I am a Jew, so it's one thing for me, but the big leap I have to do is to become like a Gentile to reach Gentiles. Wherever you put me down, I will seek to be like the person I'm trying to reach in whatever way I can to build bridges to present Jesus to them. My identity is no longer Jewish or English. Or it's a Jesus. I'm a Jesus person. So radically has Jesus changed me. So radically has Jesus filled my life. This is who I am. Yeah, I was brought up as a Jew. Of course, he knows that. But I'm not saying. Well, obviously, I am a Jew, so I know how to reach Jews. I have to change to be like a Gentile to reach Gentiles. No, I have to adapt to be a Jew to reach the Jews. I have to adapt to be a Gentile to reach Gentiles. I have to... Are you nod or shake if you... I'm not getting through. There's a couple of nods, a couple of frowns.
It's not like saying that, for example. Because I'm a Christian... you identify as British people than French people. So you don't have to say to the British, I become British, because I am British.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's what Paul doesn't say, you see. You'd expect Paul to say that, but he doesn't. That's the point. I become...
Isn't that because he realises that through Jesus he has now become something else?
Exactly, yeah. Because everything has changed. He's not. His Britishness is so insignificant. Yeah. His Jesusness fills everything. It's so radical that it's not I'm British and I've twisted a bit and added in the Christian bit. The Christian has filled everything. That the British bit is almost... I actually have to kind of think, what does it mean now to reach a British person? Because I'm not the same as my neighbour who's not a Christian. There's a chasm of difference between us. And the point I'm making is just that it's just this point that Paul. You see, we would that. Your question really is what I'm driving, because I think that's what if we were really thinking about this passage and carefully as we came across it, we would be surprised to hear Paul say to the Jews, "I became as a Jew in order to win the Jews," because we would think, well, you don't need to do that because you are a Jew. We could see that you need to become like the Gentiles because you're not a Gentile. but we would be confused that you want to become like a Jew to reach the Jews. And he would say, because the gospel is so radical and has so radically redefined who I am. It's a completely different category of being, of identity, of everything. And I'm saying that well, that's what Paul does, and really he does it because he's so blown away and impacted by the gospel. Can Patricia then come?
I get that and I agree with you, but I also think it sounds like you're saying culture doesn't matter, and I think it does. Because I see that elsewhere, like around the growing revelation, that every tribe, just as I say, a million Christians, there's every tribe and language. And so I think culture is a good thing. But when you're talking about what Christ, you reach deeper and transform.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but I hope.
Well, you don't quite, because. The point is, Paul is not denying cultures. He's saying, for the sake of the gospel, I need to enter every culture I go into for the sake of the gospel. So I don't just become me, and Jews and the Gentiles have to just get me however I am. There's a Jewish culture, right, I need to get inside the Jewish culture. There's a Gentile culture, I need to get inside the Gentile culture. Wherever I go, I'm willing to adapt everything in every way possible that I can conceivably do, except for adapting the gospel, in order that I do all these things, I become all things to all men, that I might reach some for the gospel. The gospel is so radical that actually there will be Christians from every tribe, language, but what will be the defining reality amongst us is that we know Jesus. And when I'm for the sake of the gospel trying to reach people, I am willing to shed everything to reach that culture, that person, for the gospel. And what I want to kind of go is that really that this is the sort of thing you start to kind of, well, you sort of mull that over. There's all sorts of ramifications and implications for us, but
I think he's saying that if we want to reach people in Normans and Rose and Darwin, we're probably better off to go and live amongst them. But if we do so and we're not decent, then it's pointless. Our being has to exude Christ-likeness. We have to speak of it. If I want to win people in the centre of Derby for Christ, it's very difficult for me to do it living in Duffield in a nice, big, lovely house. I'm open to all sorts of criticism. I've got to go and be amongst them culturally. But it's complete pointless if I don't take the gospel with me.
Oh yeah. And the actual how you do it is, and that's not what he's not giving his details on what that, you know, how I become like it and how you must become like it, this and how he's just the point again is the principle is this, what he's going to drive over is he is willing to put to one side his preferences, his rights, his cultural assumptions and so on, for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the other person, that he might reach as many as he can for Christ, and that he's willing to put one side all things that he might hold and cherish as dear for the sake.
Challenges me because I know I'm not.
Yep.
Prepared to do that.
Yep.
Right.
No.
You know.
Hello.
I satisfy myself with saying this is a cult.
Yeah.
I'll work in this culture.
Yeah. And where it's true, I mean, let's, you know, it's the principle I want to get at. Not all of us are called to do what Paul did, to go travelling around the Middle East proclaiming Jesus.
It's the same principle.
The principle is the point, yeah. Our identity in Christ supersedes every other identity we have if we were a gospel people. That's what I'm. And it's just a remarkable little passage when you realise he's a Jew saying, I need to become like a Jew.
Yeah. Because he was
Yeah. And it's partly because their history has been the church, and what goes the name of Christian has often failed them and been treated them very badly in the name of Christianity. I wish they would take on the name Christian, because we change our name and we come up with a new name that we don't distinguish within the body of Christ. That though there are culturally, but actually, I am a Christian, a Jesus person. And you're right, Paul was special in A Man for the Season, but he does say at the end there, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. And he's saying, look, this is Jesus has done this more than anyone. He's given up his divine glory and emptied himself and humbled as obedient to death on the cross. Start to kind of think about that. He's saying, I've become all things to all men. It doesn't mean that I have no backbone. I'm doing all this for the sake of the gospel, but I will not change the gospel, which is a big subject, because any things we say we won't change, we've got to watch out, because that means they're gospel. They're our gospel. I think I've said this before, a little example that somebody once said to me, I couldn't worship this morning because the candles weren't lit. Now, to me, it just doesn't matter to the slightest whether the candles are lit or whether they're not. As soon as they said that, my response was, in that case, I never want to light the candles again. Because they do matter to you. You're making them a part of your gospel. I can't worship God unless candles are lit. We should be able to, because of the gospel. It's a part of your gospel. Whenever we make anything, I can't do without X, and we're adding it to the gospel, and it's not Jesus, it's the Jesus plus. Preferences are different, okay. But what does that mean look like in practice? A willingness, things like to put my personal likes, dislikes to one side, to put no unnecessary barriers or stumbling blocks before unbelievers accept the offence of the gospel itself. We need to be very careful about that, including even our manner. We can think people are offended by the gospel, actually they've been offended by the way we've shared it. A willingness to put myself out for the sake of, that's what's driving Paul in these verses. Okay, what I want to do is to, let's just use one example. Might that look like for us on a Sunday? And what I'm going to suggest is, I've got implications of that for what I or we do on a Sunday. And so there are three: before the service, during the service, and after the service on a Sunday. Just use this as one example. And if I could go, if you start with before the service, if you start with during the service, if you start with after the service, you start with before the service, and you start with during the service, and try and get through all three, and then we'll just have a bit of feedback, okay? But it's literally brainstorming. What are the implications of? And this can be, I mean, this is like huge. You can be all, you know, completely left field on this. What are the implications of? What does it mean to think about? And when you become all things to all men to win some, that I'm willing to not to insist on my rights for the sake of the other, for the sake of the gospel, that some might be saved. Those kind of things. And we'll just brainstorm for a bit, and then we'll. Is that okay?